and welcome to the fourth edition of the Twickenham CC podcast. My name is Dan Huff and I am the club secretary. With me here today are Eugene Berger. Hi, Eug, all okay?
Evening, Dan. Very well, thanks, and you?
Battling on. And I'm very pleased to be able to introduce basically a TCC legend, Mr. Steve Watts, captain of the third 11. Wattsy, all good?
Utterly marvellous, Dan.
Utterly marvellous.
That's good evening to everyone and good day.
Fantastic to hear that you're utterly marvellous. Would that have anything to do with the fact you've just come back from Nets?
It would indeed. It would indeed. An exceptionally energising session.
Crikey.
About 25 to 30 of us down on the green, trying some different techniques out of Nets, fast rotations, you're out, lots of different ways of doing things that we haven't looked at for a while. And we had a lot of very happy cricketers going away at the end of it, I think.
Marvellous. Well, talk us through that. So everybody was on the green, right? So this is people from all five sides.
That's right. We've obviously got a new mobile net. A great investment already, I'd say. So we had lads from the ones and twos, obviously, with their slightly higher standards on one side. And then the threes and fours and fives that are usually down at St. James's on the other net. But the big innovation, really, that Scott brought in was to have rotating batsmen so that you are, when you're out, but you face no more than four balls in a go, which gives you a little chance to you know, go more like a match situation.
Can you leave all four?
You certainly can.
As long as that's in the game. And
yeah, and so and some people certainly did, especially when Ozzy was bowling them. But it was really, really good innovation. That allows you to sort of go away and think about your batting while the other guy's in. A lot more akin to a real match situation, but also focus on your technique rather than a match situation. So it's funny how small little tweaks like that can really get more out of your practice methods. So I would encourage anyone who listens to this to come along from next week because it isn't your bog standard net session.
No, I wasn't there, obviously. I'm trying to visualise this. So we've now got two mobile nets, right? And were they on opposite sides of the square? Is that how it
they
was?
They were.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So fielding drills elsewhere too, I suppose. Is that
there,
right?
There were some little drills going on. I think there was a little warm-up. I missed that. I think my warm-up.
Oh, I like it. Tactical. I like that.
But no, really, really good. And Scott, obviously our coach, came and spent time with both sets as well.
Well, I did have a lot of time for Scott, but I had a malicious rumour that he saw you bowling and thought there was some potential. Is this right?
It was quite extraordinary. The first time I think for 28 years that somebody's seen my potential. having been a previous first class cricketer, it's probably the first time I've played with someone with that ability to spot such potential for that longer time. So obviously when I'm back after this weekend, I'll be opening the bowling in the threes. So thank you, Scott.
If a leg spinner can open for South Africa today, then why not in Twickenham CC third 11? Although of course it is worth noting how South Africa got on today. Do you want to talk us through that one? Any thoughts on SA's performance against England?
I was really hoping to go through this podcast without mentioning a single thing and just hanging our heads in shame.
More no chance
of the loss today. Yeah, unbelievable. You know, it was interesting. I was talking to a couple of people yesterday and today, and they were talking about how, well, the media's already got England, you know, picking up the trophy. And tell you what, based on today's performance, it certainly looks that way. They, you know, very, very well-rounded performance, batting, bowling, fielding. I guess it was okay in some instances. One or two catches were fairly decent, but what a performance.
One or two catches were fairly they were, yeah. I thought Ben Stokes is one of the best you'll see all summer. Yeah.
I do have one thing to say. If he was standing in his regular position on the boundary, it was, you know, two-handed catch, but, you know.
I have got a chip in with one of our Twickenham favourites, Tom Field, who began the day with a little tweet saying,
I saw this.
Ben Stokes the most overrated player in England, which was just beautiful because it served to fire up our man. Ideally, he must have read it. I think Ben probably does read Tom's.
Well, he looks up to him. I know that. He sees him as a, you know, as a figurehead.
Standard, yeah.
He wouldn't. Yeah. No, I did notice that. Yeah, that was quite delicious, wasn't it? When Fieldy tweeted that. But joking apart, Yuge, I thought it was quite interesting from SA today. I didn't really know what to expect from them. There's a few players in there that I don't know that well. They looked a bit. The batting looked a bit light, to be honest. I don't know if that's because we being England, bowled pretty well, or we've got a strong attack. Is the feeling in SA that the batting's got enough firepower and today was an off day, or what's the take?
Again, if you read the social media feed that again, it was a bit of a surprise to see David Miller left out today for some reason. That, you know, somebody that normally comes in and bolsters the middle order and has successfully done it for a number of years was not selected. So again, the selectors obviously saw something. And I have to say, though, that I think we could have had David Miller in, and I just think, you know, that the England performance today, firstly batting, and then, you know, I obviously, you know, spoke a little couple of weeks ago when we did the podcast about Archer and how I think he's going to be the key factor when it comes to any side playing against England, and that he's, you know, he's just going to have that X factor. He's going to come out and take out your big names. Mm. And again, he did it today perfectly. You know, he took out, you know, most of the guys that were in form at some stage and ended up with, I think it was 3 wickets. It's one of those games where you just go, from a South African point of view, you know, you just sort of go, you know what, they were much better than us, but it's early days and we've got a long tournament ahead. Let's just forge ahead.
Well, it's certainly that. And it's interesting you make that point about a long tournament. I mean, I think it finishes sometime at the end of 2021, doesn't it? The amount of games that are in it. And I mean, I do wonder, we've only got 10 teams in it, but of course we play everybody once. Is it too long? Should it be perhaps maybe two groups of six with a couple of the smaller nations in it? What's your take on the way the tournament's organised?
Look, I have very strong perspectives on this, Dan. I grew up with, you know, Mexico 86 World Cup and all of those sporting events where every game was, you know, every single household in the nation had the television on because it was so important and so critical.
I remember seeing Hungary was it 10-0 Hungary beat El Salvador in that tournament? And I remember it like it was yesterday.
But, you know, one of the things that endeared me and made me love sport in the first place was the massive occasion. You know, we all love it during the Football World Cup when we're into the knockout stage. You know, I think I just think the knockout format or at least a format with smaller divisions where every game's critical and upsets and surprises can happen, just bring people alive and they make it such an appointment to view. And unfortunately, you know, being someone who works obviously in sports marketing, I'm sort of going against myself a little bit here, but it is the sort of commercial side of cricket and the money making nature that I think has gone against the sort of natural, the natural magic of the sport. I mean, you know, people could say, well, at least in a league format, you're going to get the top four teams after that amount of time, but doesn't that take away a little bit of the sort of romance and chance of it all? So I think it's a bit of a shame. But at the same time, on the other hand, we do get 6 weeks or so of pretty much permanent cricket, which is never a bad thing. So,
well, unless you want to stay married, you know, it's difficult, you know, in our household. I've already had moans and groans about the amount of cricket that's been on in one day, but no, I totally get that. And I think we can read that right the way back to 2011 when India got knocked out in the first round. I think from memory, we were in groups of three teams and India somehow managed to get knocked out within the first 10 days of the tournament. And of course, financially, that is a weapons grade disaster. And so I think from then on in, there was never going to be any chance that India, Australia or England were going to be knocked out that quick again. And this is, I guess, the logical endpoint of that. And what about the smaller nations? The Scotland's, you know,
Ireland.
Ireland, exactly. I mean, Holland.
I just think the perfect format for the World Cup in cricket is four groups of four, you know, and have the small nations, give them that moment in the sun, you know, help them develop their sport in that way, by being able to come to the World Cup. And you're still going to have enough cricket, enough top quality cricket and very important matches. You go to quarterfinal stage, semis, finals. And those seven matches will be watched by not just every cricket fan pretty much in the country, but...
Hey, up. Yuge, you okay?
Yeah, all good. Dog's apparently barking in the background. Apologies for that.
But not just by every cricket fan in the country, but this is this is when you bring other people into the sport as well. And, you know, we've got a very long a very long bit of foreplay here until the real action sort of hits us within 3 days of each other, pretty much at the end of the tournament, haven't we?
Yeah. I have to say one thing, though. The one thing that this is going to bring is it's going to bring all of the sides that you want to see play against each other. Where sometimes when it's 3x3, 4x4, whatever you want to call it, you won't get the big nations playing against each other. You won't get those crowd fillers. You know, you'll have, I remember when, you know, the last England round, I think Netherlands played South Africa and the stadium was basically empty. So, you know.
But that's going to happen again, though, isn't it, Huge? You're going to have, eventually you're going to have a team who's seventh playing a team who's ninth. It's going to be a meaningless game of cricket, no?
Yeah, agreed with that. But I'm more looking at the top end. So I think not having Australia play India or England or South Africa or Pakistan or New Zealand, I think that's more beneficial seeing those guys playing against each other. And then having some of the smaller nations play against each other, like you say, the 9 and 10s that play against each other in the pool stages or in the group, if we can call it that. I personally like this one. One, still going to get the upsets. You're still going to see, you know, a couple of games go very tight down to the wire of some of the minnow nations challenging the big nations.
But they're not in it, Huge. The minnow nations are Bangladesh and Afghanistan. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are Bangladesh still a minnow?
I'd call them a minnow, maybe, yeah.
Okay. I mean, because the thing I always think is that, you know, Ireland did remarkably well in one, didn't they? They qualified ahead of England. Well, I'd say that's probably not that remarkable, given our record in recent World Cups, but Ireland certainly qualified. The Dutch are not the worst cricket side you'll ever see, and just feels a bit, in a World Cup, that they're nowhere in sight. That just feels a bit of a shame, really. The dramatic story of West Indies beating Pakistan doesn't quite sound the same to me as a potential Ireland beating anyone.
Yeah, I suppose there's two sides to that. I'm more looking at the top end than the bottom end, and I totally get where you guys are coming from. But I think that the viewing audience that we'll have, if you look at it, and again, maybe it's the commercial side, there's going to be a lot more people viewing the big games because they are going to be those big games. And yeah, I agree that there will be, you know, less viewers for the smaller games, but it's a give and take, I guess, on this scenario.
Yeah, I think for me, that's where the ICC Champions Trophy would come in. And you would maybe, you know, really focus in then on the top five or six sides in the world and do a round robin there every 2 years. But the World Cup should be for everyone, in my opinion. It's something that, you know, that the minnows should have. I mean, look what Ireland managed to achieve. They managed to crown themselves with an England captain. I mean, you don't get that platform every, you know, without the World Cup. So,
yeah, and the name's in the title, isn't it? Isn't that the giveaway? World? Shouldn't it be as many people as you could possibly get in? I mean, maybe not. I take Huge's point. If you want to see the top quality, then it has to be a smaller number. And I mean, the tournament is already really long. 6 weeks is a long time.
And perhaps how long have the other World Cups been? I haven't actually looked at that.
Long as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at something else. I said it was 2011 when India got knocked out early. It was 2007, actually, in the Caribbean. And that tournament, they had a group stages where everybody played three games.
Oh.
And in India's group, they got knocked out by Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. And then you had a Super 8 where you played all the other teams that you'd not played. Sure. And then you had, I think, semi-finals and a final. So that went on for the best part of 2 months, which is... Yeah, it's a long time for a big tournament, I guess.
Let's hope they've got it right this time and we see what we want to see. I understand there's not going to be the small nations, but yeah.
I still think it'll be a great tournament. And I think today was, you know, although it wasn't a close game, it was a good curtain raiser. I do think South Africa will come strong.
I like that, a curtain raiser. Just beat South Africa by 100.
But I do think South Africa will bounce back. I think, you know, I think they've got some good players. I couldn't believe Miller being left out. I mean, I always look at things and think, who are the players that the opposition doesn't want to see on the field? That's the way I would always pick a team. And there's no way that England, you know, England would have been laughing when they saw he was left out of the lineup. Yeah. So, and Dale Steyn coming back as well, you know, hopefully, if he gets fit. I'd like to see South Africa make it to the top four. Always a good side to have around.
Yeah. But I do think there's a bit of a balance issue. And I see that in the England team where, you know, you've got the raw pace, you've got a legger, you've got an offie, you've got various bits and bobs of other seam bowling that you could call on. You've got batting that just never stops coming at you. And I don't really see that in SA. I mean, I'm not saying you won't get into the top four, but I would probably bet against it because my gut feeling is India and Australia are strong. West Indies, looking forward to tomorrow. I think it'll be an interesting game tomorrow. Mm. And if the West Indies come on strong, then I think those are your four. That'd be my guess. But I mean, what do I know? But who are you going for, though, Steve? I'm going to ask you for some predictions here. Who's going to make the top four?
I would say England and India are nailed on. Unfortunately, I think the Aussies will make it. I mean, I think there'll be one surprise package, as there usually is. You know, New Zealand are always interesting to me. Yeah, if Trent Bolt gets his game going again, their batting lineup is, you know, often produces an unknown star or two in the World Cup. I think the Windies could be anything. I mean, I just feel that like a knockout, more of a knockout style tournament would suit them better. I think, you know, they're the sort of team that can get hot and beat anyone on their day, but over a 9-10 game, will they sneak into the top four? Not so sure. So yeah, you know, and Pakistan, you know, although we've just sort of given them a bit of a drubbing, they're not a bad side, and they've got Amir coming back. You know, they'll be there or thereabouts as well. They seem to pull it out in big tournaments, don't they? So
well, that was you saying basically every team in the tournament, bar Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, has got a chance, Steve, and I appreciate that.
Yeah,
but the four names you're going to give me are
I'm going to give you England, India, Australia, and I'm going to go New Zealand because you went West Indies.
Okay, I think that's a fair call. I'm not totally sure West Indies is going to be right, but gut instincts at this stage is what it's all about. Yuge, who are your four?
Same as you, Dan. I'm going one further though and say that the final is going to be between England and West Indies.
I think
West Indies have got a great shot. I don't know why. I said this a couple of weeks ago too when we did one of the other podcasts. I just think the West Indies have the X factor this time around. You know, there's a lot of people that are going to be retiring. They've got the nice mix of youth and experience. And yeah, they just seem to be, you know, hitting form at the right time, looking at the scores and the games that they had in the warm-up. So pretty much the same as England.
Yeah. One thing I would say, last thing about the World Cup, I was going to say before, Watsi, after you made the point about it being a good tournament, is that I'll put my flag in the air on this one. I think England's the best place to host these tournaments. There's people from all of the cricket in world here, mainly because Britain's a multicultural society. So the grounds will be full, not just the people, because they'll be full of people in India, but they'll be full of people supporting their teams. And it won't be like Baku on Wednesday, where there was one man and his dog there. You know, it will absolutely be stadiums full of fans supporting their teams properly. And I think that's good. That makes the tournament tick a little bit. And as long as the weather holds, I think it'll be a fantastic 6 weeks. Bringing things back to home a little bit more, we have, of course, had three league weeks now. Some sides doing very well. Yuge, play 3-1-3.
Yep, been on the side of some good wins for a change.
Yep, you know, some sides struggling badly. It wasn't badly, but struggling. Poor old fifths. I think our play three lost three, which is a bit unfortunate, but they're certainly scoring a few runs.
Yeah,
which
batting
is
well.
Yeah. Chris Wilde definitely deserves a mention there, leading from the front and having scored a 50. I know Johnny Boge has been whacking a few runs around, and I think there's room to be optimistic there. So fingers crossed the fifths come to the party at the weekend.
What's the three from three?
They are indeed. Yeah, that's very true. The ones, well, they've won one, but they've played Ealing too. So that losing at Ealing is no disgrace. The threes, Watsi, you've won one, lost two, right?
We have indeed. Yes. It's been a tough start. We played Ealing first game, who I've got to say are one of the best threes teams I've played against in my 5-year tenure as captain. They're a fantastic cricket team for our level. So, you know,
I think they only came down last year, didn't they? And I suspect they had a bad year last year.
I think the club may have strengthened a little bit. And, you know, we certainly played against some very, very good cricketers in that game and couldn't have any regrets really about that one. But, you know, two teams go up. I've got my sights firmly set on the top of that division this year after the great escape last year. We know that traditionally, Twickenham, we're a club that get better as the season goes on, especially the threes. We always start slowly. Every year I beg everyone for their availability in May, and every year people forget that the season starts until June. but by the same token, you know, it's two games that have gone down. We've got a big game on Saturday.
Who's it this week?
North Middlesex over. Oh. I think we're playing them in Norwich.
Yeah,
or Ipswich or somewhere.
Or Norway or something. Yeah, yeah, it's miles away.
Yeah, we have to get a ferry, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be playing them down there. That's a winnable game. They did score 290 last week, but they did lose as well against Ealing, who got 320. So, you know, that's a winnable game for us. And then from there, I think that's a platform for us to move forward. I think, you know, we've done a lot of work over the winter as a club to try and make ourselves stronger. As you know, sort of recruiting players, getting good young talent, getting some of the St Mary's lads to come and join us.
I was going to flag that up. So we are developing this relationship with St Mary's, aren't we? Certainly in the winter, we have quite strong links with them and using their facilities. You play at St Mary's ground, and we've got one or two more of their guys moving over and playing with us on Saturdays, right?
We have, and I think we're going to be up to five or six this weekend. And, you know, the great thing about these guys is that not they just good cricketers, but they're the right age. You know, getting these guys
you ageist, Watsy. How dare you?
Oh, no, look, people like me and you are going to be around the club forever, Dan.
Yeah.
It's our life, basically.
I get you, don't worry. I get you.
We love it. But we need the next generation. And you know, it really energises a club to have a young base that want to stay around on a Saturday night and frankly, get on with each other and just enjoy spending more time at cricket because of that. And it sort of feeds itself a bit. And
spot on.
I'm really hopeful that as the season goes on, you know, I think the twos look really strong this year. I'm obviously hopeful of the ones as well. But I think that, you know, as a club, we can get a run going and at some point, hopefully get that chairman to stick his hand in his pocket. So
buy a few beers for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. All five sides. Come on this weekend.
Well, we weren't far away from that. We were in week two. For those who are unaware, John Barney's always said, our club chairman, long-standing club chairman, that if all five Saturday sides win, then the beers are on him in the club on a Saturday night. And the first four sides won in week two. The fours had a walkover, so we knew they'd won. And the first, second, and third one, and we knew that the fifth had scored a lot of runs, right? I can't remember exactly how many they had scored, but it was 200 plus, wasn't it?
I think it was 252. Yeah. Something like
252, that. And they lost on Broome Road, having scored 252. So, Reg, we are coming for you. And fingers crossed, it won't be long before we get that five out of five. Huge. The twos, well, obviously I turned out on Saturday for the twos, so and that was really enjoyable. We had a reasonably entertaining game, didn't we? Do you want to talk everyone through how that one panned out?
Yeah, it was a good day. I'm trying to remember what happened. Was there something memorable? I can't really remember. Yeah, it was a very good game of cricket. You know, when you win by one wicket in the end, it, you know, high, low total, whatever it is, when you get to that's how you can, you know, mark off and say that both sides had a very, very good game. I mean, it was a topsy-turvy game. You know, we were, we bowled quite well. We had them, they batted very well when we started because they had a lot of runs on the board in the first couple of overs. And then we had a big comeback and I think we bowled them out for 168 in the end, something like that.
Yeah, 167, I think, yeah.
167, yeah, we were chasing 168. And then the top order went well. You know, we had Steve Cowley come in, scored some good runs at the top of the order, many collapses we normally do. And then, you know, Sam Cliff come in and score a lot of runs alongside Tony Hill to build a partnership. And then I suppose it's the rest is on camera, as they say.
Well, it's all on camera. Of course, Pitch Vision has all 6 or 7 hours of the game there for those who want to go back and look at it. And I have not done that, just to be clear, in case anyone felt that I might do. I've looked at bits of it, but I think any game where both sides won and lost it about three times is a good game of cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And so many good games of cricket are not high scoring. And 167 doesn't win you many games on Twickenham Green as a rule. But it certainly gave Southgate a fighting chance, didn't it? And until Cliffy came in, we were losing that game, Huge, yeah?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were. I mean, for him to step up and come in, again, you know, you speak to him and he says he loves those sort of environments. He comes in down the order, you know, everybody's going, oh, well, this is a lost cause or it's something we're going to get close on. And he just, you know, loves that sort of environment. And you could see that when he was batting, built a nice partnership with anybody that came in with him. And yeah. You know, just about got us over the line, but
And for those who are not aware, I was going to come in on Watsy on this in a minute, because you know Cliffy better than most of us, because he's played a lot of his cricket with you in the threes. But for those who are not aware, the actual finish of the game, of course, was that we needed ultimately three to win with a bit of time. We had 12 balls left, I think, 14 balls. And Don Thanby, who scored 50 on Sunday, I should say, for the Sunday 11. So clearly he can wield the bat. He managed to snick off to the Southgate keeper. It went straight into his gloves and straight out again. And that was slightly odd, because he's a decent keeper. He's certainly, you know, one of the better ones in the division. And it trickled behind him and plonked into the helmet. So five penalty runs. And that saw us home. And, of course, all of that is online. And we've had a few people looking at a number of, well, at least two things that happened in that game at Hughes. Do you want to talk us through the second of those incidents? What was all that about?
Yeah, there was a rather random incident where a dog got off its leash and we presume was chasing some birds. But you know, when you look at the footage from the camera, you just see the dog running across it.
Hurtling. It was going at a rate of knots.
And then the poor lady was chasing the dog. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's gone a little bit viral, this this clip.
Yeah. I've got some of my friends at Prozone to check that clip out, and apparently she was running a 9.5600 meters.
Well, I can tell you Steve, she was running in high heels, mate. So
well, there you go.
It's even more impressive.
Yeah, you definitely had the best view, Dan.
Yeah, well, I think it was when Tony Hill was out, and I think Tony was just walking off, and I was waiting for Dom to come out and bat, and I just remember sort of, you know, catching the dogs. Dog was white, so it was quite a striking dog. And catching that out the corner of my eye, and both the keeper and I turned round to look at it at exactly the same time. And I think that sort of added a slight comedy element to the whole thing. But, you know, 37,000 views now, which says that quite a few people were tickled by it. What I should say, I think Mo Ahmed was the first to see it. I think he was the first to actually notice that. And he put a clip up, which we then put on the web, and bang, you know, the rest of the cricket and world seems to be taking that in. You were watching Watsy, weren't you? Because you'd finished a bit earlier than us. You were watching the situation.
Yeah, we were sat after, you know, we just had a close finish ourselves, only got 130 on the board, which was never enough, but managed to take seven wickets and make it a good game. And we came in, and obviously, you know, we were desperate for some salvation in the club and went to watch. And obviously, you know, a number of the players who were in the twos last week have played quite a few times for the threes, so we were obviously supporting them as well. And it was just great to be able to watch that on pitch vision and watch that drama unfold. And to see it go over the line the way it did was just fantastic. Your leap, Dan, I mean, it was it was absolute. Was it Tardelli?
Tardelli.
Yeah, you know, that was what it reminded me
you
of.
Just no idea about Marco Tardelli, but I'm here in your 1982 World Cup final. Yeah.
You were like a six-year-old on Christmas morning. It was fantastic.
I thought it was a bit more like a Morris dancer, really, but that's not a compliment. Yeah. But, you know, didn't expect to win. I had to explain to Don Thanby that we had won, because, of course, he didn't really know what had happened. He just sort of snicked it, thought he was out. Oh, I'm not. I better run a by. And I don't think he'd actually realised at all that the ball had hit the helmet.
Without blowing smoke, though, when I saw that the old stager, Mr. Hoff, was at the crease, right at the business end, I felt good about proceeding.
Well, you know what?
We'd be fine.
I look back at it. I didn't play a single leave-alone shot, Huge.
You're keeping up with the kids, Dan. That's what they say.
I thought that. I thought I'll be dill scooping him before long, and I won't even realise I'm doing it. This cricket, so much going wrong, you know. So much changing, and I'm not sure I'm in control of it. But it was great to play. I have to say, thanks for calling us up, and it couldn't have worked out much better. But I mean, in terms of the team, played 3-1-3. You must really be, you know, gunning to go back into the top flight, right?
Yeah, one game at a time. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves. It's the one thing we don't want to do.
I like it. Good cliche. I like that.
We are playing we're playing against East Coast this weekend, who've also got 3-from-3. So, yeah, should be a good game of cricket again. You know, we've got the team that we want, which is always nice.
You mean you've dropped me? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we haven't had the conversation yet, Dan. But yeah, unfortunately, you're not selected this weekend.
Don't worry, I'm washing my hair this weekend. It's cool. You know, I can live with it.
No, we've got a couple of people. We've got a couple of people coming down from the ones because there's very good availability in the ones. So yeah, it'll be good.
Fantastic. Now, I think in your the thing I notice about your side, you just you've got a lot of players who can contribute. I mean, a fair few may be a little disappointed they got out cheaply on Saturday, but my feeling is that there's some runs in there. You've got a bit of variety with your bowling, and you've probably got more this week on account of a couple of people coming down. But I think good sides don't just rely on one or two people as a rule. You have seven or eight people who can contribute a big 30 like Cliffy did at the weekend to win you a game. Steve Cowley's 40 out at the top of the order was pretty impressive. And, you know, these are guys who have played quite a lot of third-team cricket, so that says a little bit about, you know, the strength in depth that's there. Good stuff indeed. Watsy, I was going to come back to you finally before we wrap up. 5 years as skipper now. What's changed in the time that you've been skipper? Or is it does it not really change? Does the challenges remain the same, just the years tick by? What have you learned over that period?
What haven't I learned, Dan? It echoes life. Do you know what the challenges? Some challenges remain the same. You know, the highs of a Monday night when we do selection and I've basically got Carlos in the third team. And then, you know, by Friday morning, I'm begging Reg to play for me. That's kind of a weekly thing. And, you know, it funnily enough, it sort of tests the old. It tests the get up and go a bit because it is difficult losing players. We're in a unique position in the third team that we're basically made out of aspiring ones and twos players and ex ones and twos players. So you basically have cricketers that are still have always been very competitive and want to win. But obviously, you know, we have to take our lumps a little bit. You know, it's still hard for me 5 years down when you lose a key man on a Friday and that kind of thing. But do you know what we realized is one of the keys around this is to develop the strength and depth in the club. And that's why it's been such a passion of mine to try and help do that. Because, you know, that's the way going forward, we will get three really strong. I think we're going to have a really strong first and second team this year. And I think we can get to that place in the threes. I think, you know, I've seen a dramatic cultural shift in my side in my 5 years. You know, where the third team was, we had a very mixed collection of cricketers and it was really around phoning up and seeing who's available. And now, you know, we're becoming a proper side in our own right. I have to say the standard in the third team league has really gone up, I think. Maybe I'm biased or maybe I'm just getting worse. But it really seems to have gone up over the sort of 4 or 5 years I've been skipper. We've now come across some very good sides and a lot deeper. It used to be that a lot of sides in our league had 3 or 4 players and then you'd just go through them like a pack of cards or you'd see off the good bowler and melt the rest. But I think clubs, as some clubs fold and go down, other clubs are becoming stronger. And having greater depth and there's less of a taboo on third team cricket. I remember when Jeff Stothart first played for us and he was like, I'm in the threes, you know, and he played a couple of games for us. And he was like, well, it's not bad cricket, that, you know, and it was that a
Northern accent I heard there?
It was a terrible accent, more Yorkshire. And I'm sorry, Jeff, I can't actually speak in Jeff's language in Jeff's accent without swearing. So, But I think that said a lot to me because Jeff's obviously played a lot of good cricket that actually, you know, and when I go back home, I play a loosely named Legends game every year. And I play against my club's old club's first team when we play that. And when you compare the sort of provincial standard, I guess, out in the Shires of first team cricket, it's probably somewhere sort of around twos and just under that. Actually within the Middlesex League. And so, you know, it's quite surprising when you look at it like that. But no, Dan, you know, I go up and down as usual, tell you. But I think we're in a really good place. I think we're in a place for hopefully our best league finish under my captaincy this year. And as I've always said, my desperate ambition is to take the third team into the top flight. You know, it drives me. It drives my wife mad because I won't quit until I achieve that. But hopefully we've got a chance this year, and we'll go for it.
Yeah, that sounds nice and positive, and certainly that's the vibes I'm hearing from others too. That that there's you know, there's a competitive league to be competitive in out there, and the threes, you know, with a fair wind, are in a decent place to do that. You've captained enough cricket sides in your time as well. Given that I asked Watsy, is anything changed since you started doing it? Is captaincy still the challenging thing that it was, but the basics are still pretty common, or are things evolving in different ways? Anything that occurs to you?
I suppose the one thing that has changed a lot, Dan, if we look at is the standard of cricket. It's gotten a lot better, you know, moving down from the first 11 to the second 11 side, it's the standard's the same. So it's good from that point of view. There's obviously the admin side, which is interesting, trying to keep people happy and make sure that they're engaged all the time. So people management. It's still fun. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, one of the things we talked about in the very first podcast was TFCs, wasn't it? And where the TFCs are, you've got to think more about them. I mean, I don't know if it really is the case, but people seem to have a lot more TFCs in the past and didn't really worry about it. And I do worry if people get TFCs now, because I don't know if they're going to keep coming back.
Yeah. I mean, it's that I can't leave this podcast without talking about this. And we talk about how the culture has changed. You know, it used to be that if you're a cricketer, everyone was just desperate to play cricket on a Saturday and there were no questions. And that became, you know, that was the thing. And captains had people, you know, coming to them and basically begging to be picked.
Yeah.
Whereas now, obviously, we spend a lot of time doing the opposite, and really man managing people. And, you know, I'm in a much more fortunate position than Carlos and Eugene. In the threes, I do try to make sure that everyone gets a game and balance that. It can be a bit harder to do that, I'm sure, at a higher level. So, you know, that man management side really does take up a lot of time, but it's also very rewarding. And you do get the right culture in your club and in your side.
The one thing I will say is, again, I'm going to throw the question out there. How many other clubs have a fifth 11? Because I'm looking at a lot of sides at the moment that don't have a fifth 11, and they only have a fifth 11 come the middle of June when the school holidays start.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, I think it's worth looking at the bigger picture of cricket in this country there, Huge, because Watson and I both come from, you know, provincial England, where my club had a third 11, and the third 11 was full of 14-year-olds and 80-year-olds.
Yeah, correct.
And there was a period where the third 11 sort of died, and it's now come back at my old club in Shrewsbury. But, you know, the idea of a fourth or a fifth 11 in Shropshire, I mean, blinking heck, this is totally different world stuff. But of course, in London, you know, London's a much bigger place. It's much more multicultural, and that's clearly positive in a cricket sense, because there's many more people playing cricket. And I just think there's more depth, and that's why the standard's stronger further down, and that's why there is more of a further down to go into. And I'm sure it's the same in Essex. I'm sure it's the same in Kent, because they get the knock-on effects of London. And so I think that massively talks into what you're saying, you know, that there is a lot more cricket played. It's better than it used to be. And it also means that clubs like ours have a fifth, and you know, periodically we've had a sixth 11 as well, when we've had so much availability. So I think there are bigger trends at work that count in our favour there.
I do expect that to happen again this year, by the way.
Yeah, I think you're right, Huge. I think the same variability, you know, obviously London is an affluent area that attracts sort of cricketing types, if you like, and we end up with fourth, fifth, 11s. It also means that we have a lot more people that do like to do something else every now and then on a Saturday, and hence why I guess, you know, where Dan, me and you might have played and we'd have maybe 13 players playing our 11 all year, you know, we regularly get 35 or 40 different players to play in the threes. I expect that again, you know, probably this year.
Yeah, good variety.
Exactly.
I like that, glass half full. I like that.
At least you get to meet a lot of good
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yep. So, guys, always good to hear from you. I think we've covered an awful lot of interesting ground there. Plenty more to come, of course. We've got 6 weeks worth of World Cup, and then something called the Ashes pops up on our radar as well. So it's going to be a great summer. Plenty more to discuss. Of course, all five teams are in action on Saturday. You are away at Eastcote.
I am. Yep, that's right.
Okay, that means the first are on the green, covered by pitch vision, obviously, but the bar will be open. Champions League final on the green on Saturday night.
Yeah, that's going to be good, yeah.
Yeah, Watsy, calm down. Okay, it's still 48 hours away.
Should be a big evening, that, actually. So if you are at a loose end and you are listening to this, definitely come around to the club. I think it starts at 8.
It does indeed, but of course we'll be getting ready for that, you know, more or less all the way through the day. So, yeah, plenty to look forward to, and hopefully we'll be chewing the fat next week again to see how we've done. So, fellas, thanks very much for your time. See you in a bit.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Cheers, fellas.